Good afternoon. My name is Laurel, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the All-EN conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. At that time, in order to ask a question, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I will now turn the call over to Desiree Fitzgerald. Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the May All-EN call. This is Desiree Fitzgerald at Social Security at the Office of Employment Support Program. I'm the Director of the Office of Ticket Operation and Provider Support. Normally, Dan would be moderating. Dan has a cold, and so I'm going to moderate instead of Dan today. Bob, are you on the line? Bob Williams? Okay, Bob Williams normally would give us a welcome if he were on the line, but Bob isn't on the line at the moment, so we'll just go ahead with the agenda. We're fortunate today to have a presentation, an effective practices presentation. That's going to take a good chunk of time, so we may not have a lot of time for questions, so I encourage you to please use the chat area, and that way if we don't get to take your call, we will have your question in the chat area, and we'll be able to respond to it as part of the minute. So I'm going to turn it over to Paula Vieille. Paula is the president of Employment Options. She'll introduce herself, and she'll be giving you a presentation on effective uses of virtual services and beneficiary screening and employment readiness, job matching, and some information about her ongoing support practices. Paula?
Hi. Hey, hi, everybody. This is Paula with Employment Options. And for those of you who don't know me, I'm the president of Employment Options, which is a large virtual employment network. I've been helping people as a vocational rehabilitation counselor since 1988, and I'm a certified vocational evaluator, having worked a lot in the field of workers' compensation and also doing a lot of evals for voc rehab as well as for the VA. So that's me. I'm going to spend a little bit of time today talking to you about how I got started in the Ticket to Work program and what's happened since and how our success can be replicated with for other ENs. So I'm hoping everybody can learn something and help their employment network grow because it's a terrific program, and I sure appreciate this opportunity. Next slide. So that's me. Lori Adler will also be joining me today. She is our social media coordinator for Employment Options, and I'll introduce her a little bit more later. Next slide. Since the program started in 2002, Employment Options has placed hundreds of beneficiaries in sustainable employment. And our success is rooted in a positive, systematic methodology of placement, which focuses on a person's abilities. We were lucky to get in at the start, at the very start of the program. That's when we started our EN. Next slide. So we started in 2003 and expanded to a national virtual EN in 2006. And I now have a staff of 15 people, all dedicated to Ticket to Work. Now, a lot of my staff are also ticket holders, but not all of them. I don't discriminate. Next slide. So this is really interesting. This is how, these are our numbers of who we've worked with and I can't see my notes anymore. And so in 2003, we started with 24 people. And I'm going to see if I can see my notes. That's crazy. Excuse me. So we started it with 24 people, and out of those 24 people, I got 16 placed, 44% of them successfully, so I was really happy about that. I continued as a solo operation in 2004 and in 2005, and just continued doing this in addition to my voc eval work in workers' comp. And, you know, by 2006, it started paying off. And so that was really exciting, and I really like Ticket. I'm awesome at placement, if I can say so myself. That's always been my strong point. And so I said, well, let's expand this to a national EN. I wasn't getting enough calls locally, and I said, let's try it virtually. By then, I'd closed my office down and moved back into my home, and it seemed like a good match. And then the calls start streaming in, and I hired another ticket holder to help me with the phones and the paperwork and collaborated. My model back then was collaborating with other private rehab counselors using kind of an administrative type of model with us doing the screening and the paperwork and the billing, and they did the placements. And I had a shared outcome payment system, and we tried this for a few years, but for me, it didn't work really that well. And by 2008, I started hiring counselors who I paid hourly. So our numbers reflect the learning curve in ticket. In 2006, when we went national, you know, if you can look at it, I think we didn't screen well enough, and our placement percentages went down to 39%. And then the new regs came up in 2008, and the number of ticket holders that we could serve and get paid for increased. So we continued to start serving more ticket holders. And as we got better at screening, so did our numbers. And you can keep looking at the numbers. In 2009, we had 220 ticket holders, and then 2010, and this past, in 2012, we served 391 ticket holders and placed 242 people successfully. And you may be asking, well, how am I defining a successful placement? What I'm defining is someone who is, we have received at least one milestone or one outcome payment. And then what else these numbers don't show are the placements that we don't get paid on. That comes out to about a third of our placements. So in 2012, we placed an additional 122 people who tried to return to work, but you know, they couldn't sustain work either because of their disability, or they were so afraid of losing their benefits they stayed working below SGA, or you know, the myriad of other things that can happen. The ticket terminated without us knowing, or there's assignment problem and we never got pay stubs, and you know the drill. So we do lose a lot of billing, some with administrative stuff, especially the ticket assignment and terminations. Sometimes they've assigned the same ticket to two or three different EAs at a time, and we really don't find out until 3 months later, and by then, it's too late. So there's a lot of work involved in getting a ticket holder back to work, but if you look at these numbers, you can see the progression, and you can see that it can happen. So I'm hoping a lot more people who finish the program. I think also when we look at these numbers, we can look at the local EN model in 2003, 2004, and 2005, and you know, you can make a good living being a local EN, and you can do incredible work and help a lot of people get back to work. So I don't think there's one model that fits all, but this is our model, and this is how we chose to grow. And so, next slide, please. So what makes us successful? What makes us successful are five things. One, knowing who we can help. Two, a systematic placement assistant methodology. We do the same thing with every client that comes in. Establish relationships with quality employers. Targeted recruiting and benefit counseling and retention made fun. So those are my five steps to success. Next slide. So number one is knowing who we can help, and that's essential because we are an outcome-based program, and I really can't afford to spend a lot of time and money on people that are not appropriate for the type of placement that we do. So everybody must pre-qualify for our services. This is the entry point of our business model, and by being efficient at the very beginning, That helps us place more people, keep those, I like to keep those percentages up of what percent of the people we help we actually place, and lets us refer those who are better served elsewhere. Next slide. And, oh, here we go. And since we are a virtual employment network, all of the vocational services that we provide are over the internet and by the phone. So not everybody is appropriate for that type of service. They have to have good communication skills that allow them to be easily coached over the phone. Some people really need face-to-face counseling, and we can't do that as a virtual employment network. A new thing we started asking people is if they can fill out a job application independently. It's not that I don't want to help the developmentally disabled. It's just that I don't think we're the most appropriate help for somebody who might be a slow learner or for somebody who doesn't have the computer skills at all to fill out an application, because they might need somebody to go and handhold them and actually take them to the Walmart kiosk, and we just can't do that, not virtually. Next slide. So we have a real strict screening process. For jobs in the community, we will talk to people over the phone because not everybody has a computer or not all jobs require that you be able to use a computer. And I do want to go back to say if we're working with somebody who has somebody who can help them fill out a job application at home and they're a community worker, we'll consider them. But if they don't have anybody on site, we can't help them. If they've got a PC or a computer, we really prefer that they apply online. That helps us with our efficiency. And for me, efficiency is important because we are an outcome-based program. I'm not getting paid for the time we talk with clients. Now, for the work-from-homers, they have to apply online. The work-from-home application is a screening tool that I designed as part of our evaluation process and one that we keep refining. We do skills testing as part of the application so that if a person doesn't type the minimum requirement of 25 words per minute that we need for these customer service jobs, we can quickly identify that as a barrier to employment for the work-from-home jobs that we're trying to fill. So let's say they typed 20 words per minute. Then we would be sending them a link to ask them to practice their typing, and then if they can't increase their speed, we ask them if they would like to consider working in the community instead. Not everybody can increase their speed. You know, some people have disabilities that they can only type 16 words per minute, but unfortunately, in these actual jobs that they would be having to do, if they only type 16 words per minute, they're not going to be able to maintain that job. They will probably not make it. They'll probably not make it through training. And then what we've done is we've just set them up for failure, and we don't really want to do that. Next slide. Okay, so after the application is received, each potential client goes through two or three more screenings to ensure viability. And again, we're not saying that a person can't work or that they can't be helped. We're just saying that we need to make sure that we're a good match, that a virtual employment network is a good match for them, and the types of jobs that we're trying to fill are something that they might actually be able to do well at. So Sheikah does the initial work-from-home screenings, and she'll gather more information about the client's work history and their ticket history and determines if they've got the phone skills and the computer skills to work from home. So she might get an application from someone, and then she talks to them, and you can't understand them over the phone. Well, unfortunately, for the work-from-home jobs, they have to have a clear speaking voice. So she does the initial evaluation, and Ray does our community evaluation screenings. He's a placement specialist, so he knows who he can work with. The ones that make it past our first screening, well, the first screen is the application, and the second screening is the first counselor. Then they're going to talk to our senior counselor, Pam Barnett, who's been helping My Employment Options now for over 15 years, and she's got a lot of knowledge about the different types of disabilities and their vocational impact. And she also knows about the emotional, physical, and intellectual requirements of the jobs that we're filling. So we may get somebody who says, oh, you know, I've got fibromyalgia. I have days where I really can't wake up and work, or I can really only work 4 hours a day. But if the jobs that we have at that time all require full-time training, then Pam makes a point to let them know, well, you know, we do have part-time jobs, but you're going to have to train full-time. Do you have the ability to do that? So we try to be realistic with people. We don't want to paint a picture like, oh, yeah, we can help you and take them on. And again, we want to make sure we don't set somebody up for failure. If we take on people who aren't well enough to work or not cut out for the types of jobs we're filling, I feel like we're doing them a disservice. Next slide. So it used to be difficult for Pam to tell people that we couldn't help them, but now she understands that by referring somebody to a more suitable EN or DVR or a community organization, we also refer people to senior employment. Not everybody who contacts us even has a ticket. Or sometimes we'll just send a person to a website. It can be very, very, very helpful for that person. So really now we look at it a lot differently. We feel really good about screening and referring people to more appropriate resources. And, you know, as a certified vocational evaluator, I used to get paid big bucks to determine whether or not a person can work. And so I think, personally, we're providing a huge service to the disability community by helping ticket holders get to a provider that's the best match for the services they need. And in case you were wondering, we received over 1,600 calls in April, and it currently costs us about $350 in marketing and screening costs to get one person IWP'd. And in case you were wondering, I'm trying to get that number down because I think it's kind of expensive. Once you look at $350 in marketing and then you're looking at another 20 hours of services, I mean, the milestone one is used up and milestone two's already been encroached on. So it does cost us a lot of money to take a person on. But hopefully if we keep the 50% placement rate, it'll be worth it. Next screen. So basically, we can't serve everyone, but we do try to help everyone. Okay, those people that we can take on, each client receives a copy of a Job Seeking Skills Manual, Disabilities, Different Abilities, A New Perspective for Job Hunters that I wrote in 1997, and I wrote it to keep my clients focused vocationally and to teach them their rights. It used to be that I'd talk to a client, they'd start talking to me about taking their cat to the vet or everything else except, what is it you can do, what are your needs, what are your values. And so by using a structured system, which in our case is my book, we get to know our clients very quickly and efficiently. So I assign them the first chapter, Getting to Know You. It's a homework assignment, and it really only takes them maybe 30 minutes, but it helps us identify their skills, interests, values, and needs. It gives us a pretext for the counselors to talk to their clients about those and keeps it focused. So that saves time, and the second chapter, Facing the Job Market, provides the framework for teaching clients their rights under the ADA. There's nothing worse than you got a perfect job for a client and you send them the job and you ask the client, well, how did your job interview go? And they talked about their disability throughout the job interview instead of them understanding that they don't really have to talk about it unless there's a real reason. So I like to make sure they understand that it's illegal for employers to inquire about their disability before I send them out on an interview. And then the third section basically is the hard skills, the app, practice, interviews, reference checks, resumes. And what I like about using this method and what my counselors like is that just the completion of the homework activity can be really revealing. The book is really short. It's only 74 pages and to the point, but you know, if clients make a bunch of excuses about not being able to complete their homework or they lose it or, you know, it just tells us a lot about the client in a very short period of time. Next slide. So, relationships with employers. Where am I? Okay. So, the way I approach employers is that I view myself as an extension of their HR department. I ask them the details of the job, the minimum requirements, do they do background checks. If I'm going to talk to an employer, I'm going to ask them, tell me about your job. I'm not going to get on the phone and tell them, well, this is Paula from Employment Options, and we help people from the Ticket to Work program. I don't get into all that. I want to know what they need, because that's what they need from me. They need screened candidates, and I'm going to provide that for them. So one of the things that I did when I started increasing my staff is I'm picky about how we talk to employers because we're helping people get jobs because of their skills and abilities, not because they have a disability. And I felt like somebody with an HR background would really understand how to talk to employers the best. And because we screen for skills, that impact of disability before even referring a client to a potential employer. So that's how we really help them a lot. Next slide. So basically, your biggest selling point to an employer is that you're screening people for them. I have one employer that tells me they get between 500 and 1,000 applicants a day, and that's like per recruiter. They told me they had 100,000 applicants last year. So if I send them 30 people in a month and 50% of them are good candidates, do you think they'd rather go look at their email with that 500 candidates that they've got to sift through, or would they rather look at my little list of 30 thinking they'll probably get 50% of them that are going to qualify? They like the volume. It saves them time and money. They should be paying me for all the screening we do for them, but I'm just happy with the placements and some of the other information that we're able to get from the employer. One of the things that we're able to do with our employers, which is different, is that if I refer 30 people to an employer, most of them we meet with biweekly, and they'll give us immediate feedback on our client. Well, I didn't find their application, or they flunked the interview, or we passed them on to the next step, or there might have been a problem, and they're able to reset it and resend them the link. Sometimes people have problems getting into interviews because of technical problems, so they'll invite them to interview again. And if they didn't have us in the middle, they'd be stuck in those 500 applicants that these recruiters are receiving a day. The other thing the employers do for us is that they're willing to overlook recent work history a lot of times for the applicants we send. So it really helps us to have that direct connect with these employers. I always tell my staff, we shouldn't be sending a client to an employer if we were the employer, if we wouldn't hire them ourselves. So I want to send good candidates to our employers. You know, every once in a while we can slip in somebody who's kind of marginal, and that's only because of these great relationships we have with our employers. For example, a lot of times you might be out there trying to send a client to one of these employers and they don't hear back, and you try to reach them, and I really think that part of our success is our volume, because an HR recruiter is not going to take the time, a lot of times, to talk to a VR counselor or an EN that calls about one client. because that call's going to take them 15 minutes. They would rather meet with me and my staff and go over the openings and talk about 30 clients in a half an hour. So that's kind of how we position ourselves with the employers. And, you know, we work very hard to keep our employers happy. We work hard to keep the numbers up, and the WOTC, next slide, the WOT tax credit is really kind of an added bonus. First of all, they're getting qualified applicants with people with the skills and abilities to do the job, and then they're getting the targeted job tax credit, so, or WOTC, whatever it is this year. So that's, you know, that's the crux of how we relate to our employers. We're an extension of their recruiting services. We really rarely discuss a person's disability with an employer. It really is none of their business for the most part, only if the person's going to need accommodation. So the nice thing is our employers, you know, they know the drill. They don't ask. So it kind of makes the interviewing process a little bit less frightening for our candidates as well. So we've got these employers, and I just talked with one this morning, and they have 540 job openings that they want us to help them try to fill. That's a lot of job openings. And not this particular employer, but I have another one. 39% of their new hires have WOTC tax credits, so they are looking at it, and that's amazing. And for the first time in my whole placement career, employers are really wanting to hire people with disabilities. They fit their target employee. These are people that need to work at home, that are loyal, and there's a lot of reasons why our candidates make better candidates than the general population, so, you know, they love us. So, Lori, I need your help. I've got 540 job openings. Can you help me find the ticket holders to find them? So I'm going to turn the next slide over to Lori, who's going to talk about how she does that.
Actually, one more slide. I think they're behind just on one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. Thank you.
There you go.
Yep, thank you. Thanks, Paula, and hello, everyone, and thanks for having me today. I'm very happy and excited to be here on behalf of Employment Options. As Paula mentioned, one of my main responsibilities in public relations is to get the word out about our work-at-home jobs and free ticket-to-work services. I have to find new and unique ways to reach new ticket holders every single month to keep our work-at-home niche growing. Technology is always changing, as you know, and I've had to think outside the box a lot lately. Job seekers often turn to the Internet now to locate their job openings and find resources in their own area. Ticket holders actually who receive SSDI or SSI are really no different. The Internet is a lifeline for many people, especially for those looking for work-at-home jobs. With our niche being in work at home, we seek out those with computer skills and who access and use the Internet. So online marketing helps us find the people for our niche much faster and easier. I use various methods to help get the word out about our jobs online. But however, we have a very interactive and widespread presence on social media, especially on Facebook and LinkedIn, which you might have be a part of our page. The key word here with social media is being interactive. You might have seen me in a LinkedIn discussion group recently sharing our tip of the week for job seekers, or saw a recent post on Facebook about the 1,000 work-at-home job openings one of our employers had on a disability agency's wall. Social media does work for our niche. It allows us to reach large numbers of ticket holders, and our connections keep growing also. It helps us to bring awareness about Ticket to Work, and at the same time, we connect with other disability-related agencies, including employment networks and employment recruiters. Social media does allow us to continue to grow our work-at-home program because we find the people we are actually looking for and who we need to fill our positions. Something else that helps us is to create YouTube videos, which you might have seen some of Paula's. They allow us to create interactive content, and we also reach ticket holders in another unique way. And people do appreciate the visual learning from that. I'm actually disabled myself and a Ticket to Work client, and ironically, I found Paula and Employment Options a few years back by reading an online post on a forum. I was looking for work from home when I was feeling better and turned to the internet for that, and that one post led me to Paula and Ticket to Work. So I still post on the same website that I found her on today, ironically. Next slide. As you will see, important part of our marketing is targeted recruiting. But we not only have to post our jobs online, we also have turned to hosting events virtually throughout the year. We often host throughout the year free webinars to give job seekers tips nationwide. And recently in March, we hosted a free virtual job fair, and we had over 600 people sign up from all across the country, which was very neat. We try to make our online events very inclusive, and we open them up to the general public. Of course, we know not everyone, by doing that, will be on SSI or SSDI that comes, but it allows us to get our name out there and our work-at-home program at a national level and also make awareness for Ticket to Work. People usually know at least one friend or family member who receives SSI or SSDI. So by opening it up to the general public, we can still reach ticket holders in that way. Also, it's important for us to be inclusive with other agencies. For example, our last job fair in March, we invited representatives from Maximus to have their own chat room for the job fair, as well as some of our national employers for work at home and community, so that job seekers could network and connect with each other. Also, to reach a broader audience, we attend community events as well nationally. As you know, we are virtual, but we still must connect and interact within our communities. Whether it is myself attending a job fair in downtown Chicago or Paula being a keynote speaker in the summer in a few months at an Ability to Works event in Atlanta, making those face-to-face connections is extremely helpful for us as well. A fun example is earlier this month, Paula and some of our marketing staff visited the Denver 9 News studio for KUSA. They took phone calls on the Jobline 9 back-to-back, as Paula already mentioned, and I fielded questions on Facebook about our thousands of job openings for work at home and Ticket to Work questions. We collaborated with another local EN and also one of our employers helped field questions as well. So we reached new ticket holders with that event, and we used a virtual approach and also being there in person. So there we used several approaches together. The event was a great success for us, and I'll let Paula share about that neat experience.
Okay, thank you, Lori. Lori does an amazing job, and if you haven't seen all of her posts, I'd be surprised because she's out there. She's all over the place. She does a great job of sharing disability news with other ENs and just does a fabulous job. Thank you, Lori.